a few minutes ago that we were moving down the line on, excuse me, April, what? April 11th, right, yeah. April 11th, see, I've lost track. April 11th. And we're moving down the line towards the completion of our Senate bill. So we're in the home stretch. With that, I'm going to go a little out of order since we have two of our esteemed colleagues here and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 728 and ask Senator Atkinson and President Courtney to come forward. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jason Atkinson, State Senator from Southern Oregon. And with me is the esteemed Senate President, and who can introduce himself. And also sitting between us is a future member of the Oregon Legislature, Mr. Aaron Matthews. When Aaron and I and the Senate President began down this road, Aaron was a senior in high school. We passed a very terrific bill that you all helped on called the Bioptic Bill. Aaron now is almost done with his master's degree. He has a wedding band, and his lovely wife is in the back. And he's all grown up, and so has this bill. And the part of the bill that we seek to do is advocate for Senate Bill 728. I'm going to let Aaron speak to the merits of the bill, but we would like to get this flowing. Mr. President?
Thank you. My name is Peter Courtney, and I'm State Senator District 11, living at 2925 Island View Drive North, here in Salem, 97303. Chair Metzger, Vice Chair Starr, Senator Larry George, Committee Administrator Janet Atkins. I'm pleased here today to support Senate Bill 28. In the 2003 session, I believe, Senator Atkins and I introduced Senate Bill 289. The bill created a four-year pilot program to allow the Department of Transportation issue permits to visually impaired drivers who use bioptic lenses. The program required certain conditions such as eye test every 2 years and a training program to qualify and remain qualified. The program also required driving only during daylight hours and at speeds not to exceed 45 miles per hour. The pilot program is scheduled to sunset, as has been indicated by Senator Atkins, July 1 of this 2008. The bill repeals the sunset provision, but it continues the program indefinitely. It's interesting. The pilot program was successful. According to ODOT, there are currently 12 drivers in the state with these licenses and four currently in the training program. Here's the question that came to my mind. I'm sure it's coming to your mind. During the pilot program, there's been one minor accident and two traffic violations. Those are the statistics supposedly that my staff has retrieved from ODOT. So we had a pilot program, thanks to you. We know the number of people that were licensed under this program, as well as those that are training. After 4 years, that's what our results are. And what I'm simply asking you to do is to continue this program on. I think the pilot program has shown that individuals who have this kind of visual impairment, given the kinds of conditions that we placed in the law and the training, are able to negotiate the roads of Oregon. And I think it's been a good piece of bill, a good piece of legislation. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. President. Sir.
All right.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I just want to thank you guys, first of all, for taking the time to hear this bill. I know you guys are very busy and have a lot of things going on. But
Glenn, put your name on the record for us.
Oh, my name is Aaron Matthews from Southern Oregon, Grants Pass, actually. I understand that as your job as a transportation committee that, excuse me, that you guys, it is your job to make sure that people are being safe, that the laws that are passed are safe, and keeping people safe. And what I'm here to explain to you is that this bill is not only safe, but it's a simple fix, and it's completely necessary for the drivers under this law. Basically, this law has been about 13 years in the making for me. When I was 9 years old, I was diagnosed with an extraordinarily rare form of juvenile macular degeneration called Stargardt's disease, which leaves me legally blind. And the term blind is something that I've been fighting my entire life, when in fact I still maintain 98% of my vision. Basically, I have no central vision. I have only peripheral vision. The way it works is that if you stick your arms out to the side, you have about 180 degrees field of vision, which is what the average person has. Your central vision is the center 3 degrees of that little slice. So you have 3 degrees out of the 180 that is missing. Basically, the doctor walked into the room and he told me, you are blind, you'll never drive, you'll never play sports, they're too dangerous, you won't be able to do school very well, and you're going to have to rely on people for the rest of your life. You're not going to have any form of independence. Well, as Senator Atkinson has told you, I graduated from the University of Oregon with a bachelor's degree in history. In the spring, I will graduate with my master's degree in education. I got married this last summer. I played on state-level basketball teams, and I also work at an elementary school where I help low-achieving students learn how to read. I have achieved everything that they told me I would never be able to, except pass this law that would allow me and others to drive. Basically, the difficulty of passing this last law was the difficulty that I faced my entire life, which was getting people to overcome the word blind. People look at me and they say, you are legally blind, and they assume that I can't walk out the door without running into it. It has been incredibly difficult to get people to look past that, and the most difficult part is when we had opposition to this bill, and people were saying, you're unsafe, you cannot drive. Well, I've had this condition for 13 years, and I have difficulty describing my vision to even my closest friends or family. And it becomes very frustrating when other people start to tell me what I can and can't see or what I can and cannot do safely. I understand the sunset clause and the restrictions that were put in the law. I understand that when you say the words blind and driving together, that people are going to be scared and people are going to be skeptical of what is going to happen. And so I understand those measures that were taken. However, under those conditions, what the Sunset Clause basically set up was a test group of us 12 drivers and the four that are in the program right now were the test group for how this bill is going to turn out. Well, as Senator Courtney already said earlier, there's 12 that have their license, there's four that are currently under training, and there's been one accident and two tickets that were issued. And I have to say that I am guilty of one of those tickets.
Honesty is really appreciated.
I blame it on my training. I was taught that U-turns were only legal when you're late to Spanish class. And so I still don't think I deserved it, but nevertheless. After this basically last 3 years of having us drive as a test group, having those statistics, I can't see that you could find any other way that this bill is safe and that this bill is necessary. We're not trying to reinvent anything. There's already 44 states that allow people of low vision to have some form of driving privileges. Oregon was one of the last states out of the 50 to provide such a law. I think that it speaks volumes that in the first session around, ODOT stringently disapproved of this law, and now, as you can see, there's no one here to oppose it. There's also not a low vision specialist that I have found that will oppose this law. The bottom line is that the bill is safe. It's been proven to be safe. It's simple. It's already running. We need it to continue, and it's necessary. What I kind of would like to explain to you all, for those of you that weren't around the first time, is how the glasses work, how the basically, logistically, how it works. And what it is we have a set of glasses with a small lens mounted on it, small telescopic lens. And what that does is that basically supplants the central vision that I have lost or that the rest of us have lost. Most people misuse their central vision or overuse it. When they're driving, they end up locking on their central vision, and which leaves them no room to see what's going on around them. They're just looking straight down the road, and that is improper use of it. The way you're supposed to use it and the way we use the bioptic is just like when you're looking in the mirror. You glance in the mirror to see who's behind you or see who's beside you. We glance in the bioptic to see what's in front of us, just like you switch over to your central vision to see what's in front of you. But while you guys do it automatically, your eyes train that way, we have to make a manual motion by looking through the lens. And for no more than, you know, a half a second or 1 second. Most people, when they get their instructional permit, basically don't read the book, go to the DMV, hopefully pass the test. Maybe they, you know, they get past the eye exam and they're on the road by the end of the day. Me, I had to go through many different steps. I had to first go to a low vision specialist who maintained that I had the vision that was safe to be continue in this program to even have the opportunity to drive. At that point, I had to have 30 hours of in-car training along with driver safety programs. And that's a minimum of 30 hours training. If at that point I was not safe, then I would have had to have had more. If I was not safe then, I would have been told, you know, you're not allowed to get your license at this point. You're not going to be a safe driver. There's such a great system of checks and balances in this law that so for to put an unsafe driver on the road, a lot of people would have to fail at their job. An eye doctor would have to put themselves on the line for someone that does not have good enough vision to drive. A driving instructor would have to put themselves on the line and put an unsafe driver on the road. And a DMV tester would have to put someone on the road that is unsafe. The great thing about the law is that it's an individually based law. It's not a blanket saying anybody with low vision can drive. It is saying that it's not a right to drive. The people of low vision have the privilege and the opportunity to see if they have the skills, and if they do, to show them that they have the skills and that they can be a safe driver on the road. All too often, I think, something that I've had to face in my life is that people base your safety on how well you can read an eye chart. And basically what that tells you is how well you can read a letter at a fixed distance while sitting in a chair. It doesn't talk about how fast your reaction time is. It doesn't talk about, you know, whether you can even see to get out the door. There's people with retinitis pigmentosa, which is basically tunnel vision, and they can ace eye chart 20/20, and they can't see who's sitting next to them. They wouldn't even be able to see Senator Atkinson because all they can see is what's directly in front of them. Last week I heard of a Washington man who got his driver's license renewed, and he's 101. He has it renewed for the next 5 years, and all he had to do was pass an eye chart. And that's not the kind of person I want on the road, not knowing what kind of abilities they have. And we...
You got a reaction.
Yeah.
He's 101.
What I'm saying is that through this bill, we're not blindly handing out driver's licenses on a pity basis. We are testing each person individually and maintaining that they have the abilities, and they are constantly retested, retrained. The restrictions that are placed on this law as far as nighttime driving and speed limits, I can understand the restrictions when they are placed there. When anybody says the word blind and driving in the same sentence, I can understand that you would enter into that law with trepidation. However, there's no medical or factual basis for those restrictions. Basically, what happens is there's photoreceptors in your eye, and those photoreceptors are basically the translators. They take in the information and translate it to the brain. Those photoreceptors are made up of rods and cones. Now, your cones basically are good for long-range vision, and that's what's in your central vision. The rods make up your peripheral vision, and that is what is most responsible for nighttime vision, sensitive motion detection, and all of your peripheral vision. So you're supposed to be using your peripheral vision 95% of the time when you're driving. And if the peripheral vision is what you use to see at night, I don't see how in any way that it's unsafe to allow us to drive at night. When in fact, most people say, well, blind kid driving, can't let him drive at night, that would be even worse. More often is the case that people who lack central vision have more acute night vision because they don't have the central vision, which is not acute tonight, to lack of sunlight. The other
question, Mr. Chair. So I notice as I'm getting older, I can't see at night, and I don't like to drive at night because I can't see as well. So what's working? My rods are failing?
Yes. Thank that would you. Be, in my expert medical opinion.
Aaron, I appreciate that. I did have one question, and Senator Courtney, Senator Atkinson, I'd like to have one of your comments on this, just so I don't get too far off by the time we get into a few more people commenting. You know, we have a Dash 1 amendment. Dash 1 does take the sunset away, because as you have articulated well, and the statistics show that the reason I chaired the Transportation Committee in 2003 when we did this bill, you made a good case. I think you made the case that it was the right thing to do, and certainly inclined to take that sunset off. Now, the bill does move into nighttime driving, takes that, and the dash one says we'll take the sunset off, but we're not ready to do that yet. I'd like to have your comment, Senator Atkinson and Senator Courtney, about that. And then there's also another option on this. Part of the reason is that we haven't tested that part yet. I mean, yes, the daytime thing, everything has worked out right, and taking the sunset off, I think, is a legitimate deal. But I almost wonder if we're going to go to nighttime, whether that should be a pilot possibility, too, where you take the sunset off this part of the bill, but, you know, try the nighttime thing. But I want to know from the chief proponents, before I ask you to sit down and get some other folks up here, what your thoughts are on that. You look in deep grief, Mr. President.
Yeah, because I didn't know these things. Well, obviously, I think the sunset should be removed for purposes of 45 miles an hour and daytime driving. I think the record shows that. The nighttime, I don't know what to say. I'm not prepared to comment on that. I don't have that kind of background, with all due respect. Don't hate me yet. I need to think about that. We came up with those other restrictions. I didn't come up with them, so I don't think Senator Axel came up with them. And so now there's this other suggestion. On this particular moment of time, I don't know what to tell you. My first reaction was to do what you suggested, Mr. Chair. I immediately went, why don't we pilot program that and let the other go? And I don't know, but I'm not an ophthalmologist, optometrist. I say that because we had a whole discussion this morning regarding scope of practice. So I don't know enough. I don't know enough to comment on that. I absolutely don't know how to respond to that.
Can I continue the thought?
Yeah, I would agree that the minimum we would like to do is make sure that the sunset goes away, because it's proven in a the Spanish class aside, it's been very safe. I think if we can eliminate that the original bill is drafted is great. If we can do a test on the other two, I think you're going to hear a good. I think the committee will hear a good case for doing that. And Mr. Chair, if you wanted to put a sunset on that to have a future legislature look at repealing another sunset on this issue, I'm sure by that time Mr. Matthews will be even more eloquent with his PhD and ready to run for office. So, you know, we can all grow up together. I think that's good. It might be the best compromise.
Thank you. And then yes, Aaron.
I would just like to say, I completely understand. I have difficulty explaining my vision to other people. I can't understand how you could possibly understand how I see or how I do the things that I have. All my life, people had said, how can you play basketball? How can you do these different things? I've never known anything different. I understand if there is skepticism, but I think that you need to give us the opportunity. I understand if you want to put a sunset clause on it, that's fine. If you want to have us go through more training for nighttime or for high-speed driving, fine. We'll prove that we are safe drivers no matter what. Just tell me what we got to do, and we'll do it. And it's going to come through safe. That's all.
Well, thank you, and I've always really appreciated your advocacy. Just so we can move on, because I think the committee is going to be receptive. Do you have one more question?
Yes.
I got a lot of people signed up.
Yeah, just a clarification. A bill does say that it would allow them to drive at any time, because it removes during daylight hours.
Without the amendment, yes. Yes, that's correct.
Without the amendment,
yes.
And then they would be able to drive more than 45 miles an hour, because that was deleted too. I just want to make sure I understand.
Yeah.
That. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, folks. Before I call the next witnesses up, I'm going to ask you to keep it brief, because we can move on, and because everybody is signed up in support, and we have Mr. Evans from MoDOT. We just want his perspective. So, if Don, is it Kreitz? Don Satter, James Cook would like to come forward. Please give us a few thoughts on your view on this bill.
My name is Don Kreitz. I'm the owner and president of Oregon Driver Education Center. I was the first individual in the state of Oregon certified to train individuals with the use of bioptic and telescopic lenses. In order to become an instructor of bioptic clients, a person has to satisfy at least 100 hours of advanced training as well as 1,000 hours of previous behind-the-wheel instruction. And so there aren't very many of us that qualify to even be instructors. Myself and one other person have been the primary trainers of those in the Bioptic program. Both Jim and Dawn are... Dawn just a couple weeks ago finished her training and is scheduled to go in for her test next week, I believe it is, and 2 weeks from now. And Jim is still in the process of training and representing two different ends of the spectrum. Jim, not a previous driver. Dawn, a previous driver whose vision came to the point where she needed the bioptic lenses. I won't spend a lot of time saying why we should continue, because it sounds like that's already established. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to go ahead and turn my attention then to the issue of the nighttime and the speed limit constraints. Aaron suggested perhaps a additional training, and I would support that. The training that we've provided up to this point has not included higher speed driving, which requires additional driving strategies. Nighttime driving as well would require additional driving strategies. And so I would propose that an amendment, if anything, that there may be a sunset clause, but that at a minimum that additional training be required to allow a person to drive at night and at higher speeds.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. My name is Dawn Satter. I am a wife, a mother, and I'm a registered nurse. I'm also legally blind. I have a hereditary birth defect called optic atrophy that my father was so kind enough to pass on to myself, my sister, and my brother. At 15, I was told I would never drive. And as a teenager, growing up as a teenager is hard enough. Getting your driver's license is tantamount to an extraordinary amount of freedom. Being told you can't drive because you don't see well enough can tear your world apart. At the age of 20, I was able to get my driver's license thanks to an eye doctor who was willing to work with me and adjust my lenses enough so that I would meet the minimum requirement of 20/70 to drive in the state. 12 years later, I was told, you do not see well enough to drive anymore. There took away 12 years of freedom and independence. Now that I'm getting it back, I don't have to rely on my husband. I don't have to rely on my family. I will be able to go places and do things on my own. I'll be able to take my children places. I can do appointments on my schedule, not based on my husband's. I believe that this program is a very good one. I agree. I think that we should do a sunset clause to try the nighttime driving. I'd never drove at night before. It would be interesting to be able to get to work on my own in the middle of the night working night shift. But right now, I don't feel safe to drive at night. However, with extended training with Don, who is quite vicious behind the wheel, it would be, I think it'd be a good program. I think that you need to continue this, and I think you need to look at letting us drive at higher speeds.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is James Cook, and I've been taking classes with Don Kreitz to get my driver's license. And I was going to start by kind of telling about myself. I was born with a disease called ocular albinism, and I don't know a whole lot about it other than the fact that I can't see very good. But when I was born, the doctor had said that I was blind and that I was totally blind. And then soon around the road, they figured out that I wasn't. And, okay, fine, I'll never ride a bike. Guess what? I rode a bike. And he said, okay, well, you won't be able to play sports. Well, I wrestled for 2 years in middle school. I played football for a year. And, you know, I go shooting with my friends on the weekends. And, you know, we're all still alive. And we all have our fingers and toes. So I think I'm doing pretty good. And I was just glad for the opportunity to be able to drive, despite the restrictions that are on there. You know, there are some things I don't necessarily agree with about it. But, you know, given the circumstances, I'll take it as it is right now. But I would like to see there maybe be some looking into as far as making the speed limit at least 55. If that's as fast as I can go, that's fine by me. Because then if I want to go to Portland or if I want to go to the coast, I can go get on the highways to get to and from those places. And I think that'd be really nice. And as far as like the nighttime and stuff is concerned, it'd be kind of nice, but I think I can make my schedule work around not having to do it. You know, I'd support it, and I think everybody's right that we should have to take extra training to be able to drive on the freeways or highways and at nighttime. And yeah, I guess that's it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tamara Bush Johnson, Brandon Johnson, and Rebecca France.
Chair Metzger and members of the Senate Business Transportation and Workforce Development Committee. My name, for the record, my name is Tamara Bush Johnson, residing at 33003 Southwest Ladd Hill Road in Wilsonville, 97070, and I represent my husband and myself. We support Senate Bill 728 as it was originally designed, but I am certainly open to the compromise of a sunset on the nighttime and the driving at 55. I think that's a really good compromise, you know, to test that, as I have full confidence that that will also be successful. We really support that for three main reasons. Our son, this is my son Brandon here, understands what he can do well, and for his whole life he's made really, really good choices. When he was born, he has albinism, which he also inherited from, I won't claim it, that must be my husband's,
pass it on to someone else.
Absolutely, right. our pediatrician said at birth, he says, you know, never tell Brandon he cannot do something because of his eyesight, or he will think he's handicapped. And we never did. We never said, no, you can't do baseball. No, you can't do sports. No, you can't do golf. You can't do any of this because of his eyesight. We never said never. We, you know, through this whole thing, Brandon played baseball. He played basketball, soccer, and was on his high school varsity golf team that went to state. And he's an awesome golfer. He was an advanced placement honor student in high school, and now he's at Oregon State majoring in engineering with all the fine little chemistry and the calculus and all those little numbers that you have to see. He passed a hunter safety test with flying colors and has been bird hunting with his father for more than 12 years now. He carried a stick, you know, the first couple of years before he was old enough to carry a gun. And he's the best shot of the two of them every time they go out hunting. With birds, that is. He's lived his life as it was given to him and never angry or complaining about his eyesight, not even once do I recall that he was, you know, bitter or resentful. But the state of Oregon has told him no, that he cannot drive a car at night or on a road where the speed of the road is more than 45 miles an hour. And he accepted this ruling and was grateful for the opportunity. But, you know, still at the same time, you know, his friends also had to take the extra effort when they, as teenagers, do stay up, you know, late at night. His friends had to drive him home and then travel another half an hour because we live on one side of Wilsonville. They lived on the other through our windy, curvy road at, you know, all hours of early morning to bring him home and then go back home themselves. So his life has been different in that way. But drivers under the bill have done well. This past summer, the Department of Motor Vehicle Services Department held a meeting where physicians, driving instructors, and drivers under the current law attended. And we heard that everyone, including the doctors, you know, testified that they could do well under this law and under nighttime driving. The third reason we really support this is renewing the law. It gives Brandon more decisions in his life. In order to be able to get any place or to take a career or a job or a career choice, he'd have to be able to make sure that he either lived in a big city then, or lived way out in the small country where he could just do very rural roads. So I hope that you consider this life-changing opportunity for these drivers, including our son, to be productive, good citizens, and stay in Oregon versus going to neighboring states who have a more liberal law and they are allowed to drive on freeways at nighttime, and we don't want to lose engineering to Oregon.
That's right. Thank you very much. Brandon, do you take have you ever been late to a Spanish class?
I might be guilty of that, yes.
Well, state your name for the record, and let me hear from you.
All right, Chair Metzger and members, for the record, my name is Brandon Johnson. The address is 33003 Southwest Ladd Hill Road, Wilsonville, Oregon, 97070. Aaron covered this covered it very well, so just I'll give a brief description and allude to what my mom had mentioned, that, you know, it's been a life-changing experience with the bill being passed and being able to drive during the daytime and under 45 with the restrictions. It's given me, you know, mobility during the day and to actually have a job during the summer that I wouldn't normally be able to have. And if the current law birth, the new bill is issued where I am allowed to drive at night, and on 45, then I wouldn't have to turn down engineering internships that I otherwise would, that I would have to commute on freeways greater than 45, and I wouldn't have to live, you know, in rural areas where I can just, you know, drive on a 45 to my occupation. I can have choices and stay in the state of Oregon and possibly have endless opportunities for where I'd want to live and have a job. So it's a pretty huge life-altering thing that can be changed, so, and I think there's room for improvement. And having it sunset, having a sunset on the law of nighttime allowing nighttime restrictions and freeways greater than 45, that would be, I think, a fair compromise to see how that works. In my case specifically, I mean, in my opinion, I think the freeway is safer and there's less things going on than a very busy intersection in downtown Portland, or in some cities there's so much more going on in a busy intersection or some of those roads than a freeway where everyone's going the same direction and there's a lot less you need to be aware of, and it's, I believe it's somewhat safer. I feel more comfortable on the freeway if I were driving there. And as far as nighttime goes, my vision impairment is, a lot of it is glare issues. So during the day, all that sunlight that's coming in and making my eyes just irritated, the nighttime driving, I feel much more comfortable in the car, and I'm able to see, just when I'm the passenger, I'm able to see much more clearly just because my eyes are relaxed. And so in my opinion, I feel safer driving at night. And so I think any drivers under the law, if they're not comfortable with driving at night, then I don't think they're going to put themselves or anyone else at risk. So I think it's up to the driver, but again, with the sunset being put in place, I think that's a fair compromise. So
thank you, Brandon. Thank you very much.
My name is Rebecca France, and I live down in South Douglas County, and I've had my driver's license about 7 months now, and I, like Brandon, have been, I'm also an albino, so I've been legally blind since birth, and as far as explaining to someone what your vision is, my vision is normal. This is the way I've always seen. I've never let it stop me, whether it be career-wise, education-wise, or driving-wise, and I'm also the nighttime. I can always change my schedule, make sure I'm not driving at night if that's a problem. Glare is also an issue with me. Nighttime would probably be easier as long as it's not raining. But I'm not going to put myself at risk. If I don't feel comfortable, I wouldn't get behind the wheel anyway. The 45 mile an hour is an issue. I live in Myrtle Creek. I live in Roseburg. I've commuted for 20 years on that same stretch of I-5. As a passenger, I know every crack in the pavement, basically, after 20 years of 5 days a week. Basically, I've spent enough time in the driver's training vehicle that I don't think I would need additional training to get on the freeway, because we were taught to drive up to 45 miles an hour, and I think the basic speed on the freeway is 45 miles an hour. So I really don't think I would be uncomfortable driving on the freeway. I don't think I would need additional training for freeway driving. I felt privileged to have the privilege of getting a driver's license in Oregon, but you've chopped me off at the knees, because basically I've paid all the money out for the driver's training. I've passed the test that all of you have passed. You feel comfortable in the car. I feel comfortable in the car. The only place I can go is the grocery store. Living rurally, everywhere is off of I-5. I can't get to work. I can't get to the doctor. I can't get to the dentist. If my husband is ill, I can't get to the hospital. I feel the only restriction on the Oregon license should be driving with the bioptic lens. There should be no other, just like anybody else that wears glasses, if they're restricted to wear their lens while they're driving, we're restricted to wear our lens while we're driving. The 45 mile an hour, just, we either have the ability to drive or we don't have the ability to drive, and I feel that we've proved we do have the ability to drive.
Thank you very much. Questions for any of these folks? Thank you very much. All right. The last person I have set to testify is Jack Evans from ODOT.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Jack Evans with the Department of Transportation. ODOT is not taking a particular position on this bill. We have no problems with extending this program. As was mentioned, it started in 2004, and the implementation was put together by an advisory committee comprising vision specialists, occupational therapists, driving instructors, and representative from the Commission for the Blind. The program has been operating now quite well. There are 16 people in the program, as was mentioned, 12 with driver's licenses, 4 with special permits, that are currently in training. Looking at what other states are doing, there's about 34 other states with low vision programs that employ this type of bioptic telescopic lens. This bill would lift the sunset of June 30th, 08. Without that, the program ends at that time. It also, as written, would lift the two restrictions. We really have no problem with lifting the general sunset and continuing on with this program. We really can't take a position on the two restrictions because we simply don't have enough information. If we look at what other states are doing, there are 34 states with a bioptic lens. 15 states have the daytime only driving, and 5 states have the restrictions on posted speeds on the roads. So if the legislature were to remove these restrictions and decide that it was wise to move forward without the restrictions, it might make sense to set that up as some type of a pilot, as you mentioned, with some special training and an evaluation by the rehabilitation training specialist on a case-by-case basis, and then put a sunset on that restricted program. That is not the ODOT's official position. I'm just reacting to the recommendation that was made, and I think that's if that's the will of the legislature, that is something that we could thoughtfully put together.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Questions for Mr. Evans? Thank you.
Question. When you said there were 5 states with posted, meaning they could drive the speed limit, whatever the speed limit was, on the roads in those 5 states?
Mr. Chair, Senator Montes Anderson, no. What I meant was that there are 5 states that have that similar restriction that we have on the 45-mile-an-hour maximum posted speed that a person in this program can drive. Mm-hmm. So the other states would not have that type of a restriction.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator George.
If I could ask Claire a question. So, Jack, what you're saying is the vast majority of states that have these programs allow this program without the restrictions that we currently have in. I mean, that's to restate that the vast majority of the states that have this don't have the two restrictions that we currently have. So if we change the law the way the bill's originally drafted, that would make us consistent with more of the states that have this program.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, the of the 34 states that have the bioptic lens requirement, 5 of those have the restriction that we have on the road speed, and 15 have the restriction that we have on daylight-only driving. So I don't know if you could say the vast majority. There's kind of a mix there. It's tough to pull out a trend.
Follow-up, are we seeing any problems in those states that don't have these restrictions? Because I'm assuming they would have reacted.
Senator Metzger, Senator George, curiously enough, a lot of states simply don't keep those statistics on the crashes or traffic violations. That's why it's been so difficult to see what the results have been in some of these states. And some of these programs have been going from 1969 and some since the 80s. But as far as tracking the accidents of people that use a bioptic lens, we were really not able to get that information. That wasn't available to us.
Yes? Thank you. Do one thing I wasn't going to do. I see Wayne Schumacher's in the back from the Oregon Optometric Physicians. Would you come forward just for a moment? I'm going to ask for your expertise because I've thrown something out here that's different than what was brought up. And don't fall and hit your head and
And I have good eyesight.
And yeah, with eyesight. That's what I was suggesting.
First hand slip.
Yes. State your name for the record.
For the record, my name is Wayne Schumacher. I'm the executive director of the Optometric Physicians Association. And we actually took the lead on this bill once we heard this was up with Senator Atkinson some years ago. And in actuality, worked very closely with the Department of Transportation, setting up the requirements, our low vision specialists up at KCI Institute and Pacific University College of Optometry. So we've got a pretty good handle on this program. We did make, a couple of errors when we first put this in place, and one was the speed restriction, because we essentially said you can't drive on a rural road, which is probably safer than the freeway, or in town for sure. And again, obviously the freeway in the I-5 corridor is probably the prime means of transportation, and we kill that for them. So our issue on that, we agree that that should be lifted. There is no empirical evidence with regards to that. It's kind of a thought process that we assume that since you're traveling at a higher speed, that things are going to happen quicker and you won't be able to react. That is indeed not supportive.
Mr. Schumacher, what is your professional opinion on maybe allowing an experiment on night driving?
Our association would agree with a pilot program again on that, possibly again looking at that in 5 to 6 years, but at least allowing it. Again, there is no real empirical data with regards. There's so many differences in issues as has been described up here with regards to the vision. I'll deviate just a little bit to say, as a motorcyclist, it's been my opinion that I really have a problem with people telling me what I can do, when I can do it, and what I have to do it with. This is the same thing. We're telling our citizens that they don't have the common sense to restrict themselves if they have a problem. And I think this population has demonstrated that they, as we do, all have the common sense to say, this is something I can do and I can't do.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Schumacher?
Just one.
Yes, Senator Starr.
I would guess that this population, no one person's eyesight is exactly the same as another's. And my understanding from the testimony is that each person is basically tested on an individual basis, and so it's very likely that one person, with the recommendation from their doctor, would be allowed to drive only during the day, and the next person, could drive with the lens during at night. And reality is that these folks are going to have to basically come with a slip from a doc to the DMV and says, here's what the doc says I can do. Correct?
Exactly. Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, you've hit the nail right on the head. I mean, we have so many hurdles in place for testing. And again, initially, the optometrist or the ophthalmologist would make that determination on the capability, would make that report too, and it would go on down the line. So by the end of the demonstration and the training, we know what the capability is. So you've got some real good safeguards in this bill, and I think it was probably one of the best bills that passed this House last session, personally.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Colleagues, I'll just tell you my thought process and see what you think. I came into the hearing today with and talking to some of the proponents about doing the dash one, which was to eliminate the sunset because it's proven to work, and let's just let it go on, but not reaching into the new arena of the nighttime driving and others. However, my feeling is, and I'd see what your thoughts are, I've been persuaded that we can reach a little further. And what I would be thinking about doing, as I indicated earlier in the hearing, is to eliminate the sunset on what we got, this program we already have, and starting a pilot program to allow the nighttime driving and eliminate the 45 and the freeway, and give that part of it a look and see if we can do it at night, add the other, eliminate the other restrictions that we already have, and just daytime, good to go, and let you drive at night, and let's test that part, that one part only, and you come back a few more years and it's just as good, we'll be done. Would that be something that you folks would support? Then what I think I'll do, we'll draft that amendment and we'll bring it back. Yes?
Is the 45 also part of the new sunset?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But yes, I will take we'll take that out. We'll just We don't need that anymore, I don't think. What I'm going to do is I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 728. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 728 and close the work session so that we can post this anytime. We'll try to have this done for you folks all next week. Your testimony was very compelling. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, let's go back to the top of the batting order and open up a work session on Senate Bill 592. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 592 was the bill at the request of the Credit Union Association. The bill allows state chartered credit unions to sell checks including travelers' checks, money orders, and other transfer instruments. It allows credit unions for a fee to cash checks and money orders. It allows credit unions to issue secondary capital accounts which are not federally insured, subject to certain terms by DCBS. And it allows a non-member to be a guarantor, a co-obligor on a credit union loan to a member. The Dash 3 amendments keep all of those provisions that were in the original bill. They do limit fees that may be charged by credit unions for check cashing, and those are consistent with a bill that's going through the House. And those fees are listed in what those fees are would be listed in the bill, and they vary. And it allows, the amendments also allow DCBS to develop criteria to determine whether a credit union meets the serving of predominantly low-income members. Mr. Chair, one of the issues in the hearing was the setting of fees by rule, and that is, there's another fee that is will be set by rule in the amendments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Pam, you want to come forward and comment on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pam Levitt, representing the Credit Union Association of Oregon, and with me is Hal Scoggins with Farley Wood, our retained counsel. Senate Bill 592 is something we do every couple years, review the Oregon Credit Union Act and make some changes that we think will improve the way credit unions are able to serve our members. Before you on the Dash 3 amendments, there are basically four major changes. There was one fee that was left in statute, and we're taking that out and allowing the department to set it by rule. In discussions with DCBS, they were interested in us having limitations on our fees on check cashing mirrored in House Bill 2202, which is moving through the process, and we agreed to that. We also did take out the emergency clause per some discussion during the hearing, and the last change was fixing a low-income designation rule. And so we'd be happy to answer any questions on the Dash 3 amendments.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Okay. Does anybody else want to comment on the amendments on this bill? I did talk to Mr. Martinez about this. As you recall, he could not be here that one original day and checked out some of the questions about some of these provisions. And as Mr. Scoggins walked through this very well for us during when we heard the bill, that this basically will conform it to the same federal chartered credit unions. But I did agree with... And Ms. Levitt also agreed with Mr. Martinez that there wasn't necessarily an emergency. So this would go into effect under normal circumstances. So with that, I would entertain a motion on the Dash 3.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 592. Any discussion? Any objection? It's ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 592 to the floor to do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Deckard's excused. Senator Starr, would you carry that bill?
Sure.
Thank you. Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 746.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 746 is the small cemeteries bill that we had a hearing on last week. The original bill would have exempt nonprofit and religious cemeteries and those with 25 or fewer burials per year from reporting and certain inspection requirements of the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board. The amendments, the Dash 3 amendments that you should have at your place today, do not go up to 25 cemeteries a year. They give certain benefits to cemeteries up to 10 per year. The current elimination of renewal fees is for cemeteries with 5 burials per year, and this doubles that amount. It makes those cemeteries, the amendments make those cemeteries eligible for a waiver of their renewal fees. And it also limits their initial registration fees, because one of the issues was finding a cemetery that didn't know it needed to be registered or had not registered and having the big a fee at the beginning. This initial registration fee for those, again, smaller than 10 burials a year would be limited to $100 with a $50 initial registration fee for any number of board members. And those cemeteries, again, the smaller cemeteries would be exempt from random inspections. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's.
Thank you, Janet. And as you recall, this was Senator Beyer's bill. And so Janet and I worked with Senator Beyer on this, and this was the amendment that he felt comfortable with. And I certainly felt comfortable with that. Does anybody else want to comment on the amendment? Do you want to comment on it at all? Okay. Senator Starr.
Move the Dastrophe Amendment to Senate Bill 746.
Senator Starr has moved the Dastrophe Amendment to Senate Bill 746. Any discussion? Any objection? Sir.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 746 as amended to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 746 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Please mark Senator Deckard as excused, and we'll ask Senator Beyer to carry his bill. Okay. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 324, and the purpose of this work session is really just a presentation by the director of the real estate agency. I thought, as we're preparing for amendments, members, to this real estate bill, a lot of discussions, and we had some time today, and I thought, well, this might be a good opportunity to kind of know what's gone on with this agency since our last go around and the different changes, and provide some context and of where we are. So when we get our amendments and we discuss this, maybe we'll be farther along the trail. So please come forward. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. My name is Katie Cannon. I'm the acting commissioner for the Oregon Real Estate Agency. What I have for you today, I don't want to scare you with a notebook. I'm not going through every word of that, but I thought it would give you some good background. I first of all wanted to talk a little bit about some of the testimony on Monday, because I know that there were some questions that came up. There was a gentleman that talked about a particular case, about whether the complainant was notified of the results, and I have that in that particular notebook. It's under Section E, and there are actually two letters that were sent out. One was sent by email to the complainant, and the other one was to the licensee. Basically, we did not find the facts of the case, did not show any violation, or did not show enough evidence for a violation, and so we closed the case without further investigation, and there was no administrative action, but we did contact them in writing. Also, there was something about the investigators not having investigators with any real estate background. Actually, the lady, Deanna Hewitt, who had worked on this particular case, was a licensee for 10 years, owned her own agency, and had 12 agents underneath her. In Section D, there is a listing of all of our investigators and their background. We have a nice balance of people that have had real estate background, investigative, and auditing. So it's a pretty good balance. You very rarely find an investigator that has all of those pieces, so we do cross-training in all of those areas. There was another request for some background information on what we've done over the last couple of years. And I'll start with first the DAS audit, which is in Section C, and it was conducted in 2005. I have put a progress report. How it's kind of constructed in there is the fact that what's in bold was the recommendation. The initial agency response is the next section, and then the update of where we are. There was a question, and we have fulfilled the recommendations from DAS. We have fulfilled all of those recommendations and are currently working with those. On the rulemaking of 2604, there is a listing on the first page of everything that we did in 2604. Those the temporary rules based on our AG recommendation came in January 1 of 06, and then by June of 06, then we adopted the permanent rules, and that we've adjusted our procedures and processes to comply with the statute and rule. Okay. In addition, I'm not going to go over the task force information since Senator Johnson covered that quite well the other day, unless you have questions. In addition, I have a marketing background, and so usually if I have a problem, I look to the customer first and see what they want, what the issue is, and do some evaluation in those areas. So I make sure that first I've defined the problem correctly, and two, then I construct my solution based on what their needs are. So first of all, when I was on the job, I went out and I conducted 6 focus groups around the state with licensees. And I had a professional facilitator, but I was lucky enough that 5 of them allowed me to stay in the room. So it was really a good experience. And they didn't hold back. They were quite candid about it, but it gave me a basis to then move forward on a little further analysis. Really what they came up with 2 large issues, I think, consistency in their contact with and information provided by the staff at all levels, and then the educational offerings for pre-license, post-license, and continuing education being offered through a combination of live, local classes, and online methods. So it was well worth the experience, and I encourage my staff, even today, to go out and meet with the people out in their offices. We've done more of that. We joined also with the Progress Board in a customer service survey, which was for our performance measures, but in that I actually paid for some additional questions on top of the basic survey because I wanted to get their input. I wanted, of what was working, what wasn't working, and then kind of categorize those. It came down once again to customer service, accurate, consistent information, expediting processes, and an improved agency website. I especially found that last one out in the rural areas, that it may be kind of hard for them to get to continuing education, so they wanted to have more remote access to be able to get their continuing education done. We started in 2006, I changed one position that was moving towards a compliance review specialist, and that person goes out into the office and goes down a checklist of their files and their records and educates them of what they're doing right and what they need to change to be in compliance. I compare it to OROSHA in the fact that they have a consulting arm, and that consulting arm helps you do your job better and make sure that you're in compliance. Well, that's what we did with Judy Parker, and we did 127 reviews in 2006. And we conduct an email survey after every one of those. We send that email survey out. It's called SurveyMonkey, and it's really slick because I can change that, anytime I want to and change the survey. But what we found is that they felt that process, that 90% of them indicated that the usefulness of that review was excellent. And they encourage us to do more of them, do them more often. Right now, Judy would get around once every 10 years to an office. And so I think one of my favorite responses was a gentleman who was a 35-year veteran in the industry, and it occurred to him in the review that maybe he hadn't kept up with all the real estate laws, and he was thankful that Judy was there and kind of helped him get in compliance. They also recommended highly that a new office within 30 to 60 days have one of these reviews done so we don't get 5 years down the road and find that they're not doing it correctly. We started in the last week of March online renewals. So a licensee can now go online, renew their license online, and pay for it online. And we've had 102, as of Monday, we've had 102 renewals. And then once again, I send out a survey after that to see how they like the system, how it needs to change, and what new services do they want. And there is a really high demand for more internet-based services that we could provide, and so we are looking forward to that. We've also surveyed the board and to see how they feel they could be more interactive and be more participatory. I can't even say
it's a tough one to say sometimes.
Thank you.
participatory,
more involved with the agency. And we also did a focus group with our own employees to see what they wanted. What came out of that is we developed the agency action plan for improved services, and that's Section A of that particular document that I gave you. And that outlines in those key areas that we felt that needed improvement, how would we go about improving those? And it gets back down to kind of six areas. Improve the services provided to licensees and the general public, which is customer service, expedited processes, streamlined interactions, and improved consistency of responses. They want improvement of external and internal education. Internal education to make sure that we're giving consistent answers. No matter who you call, if you call licensing, if you call regulations, or if you call education, you get the same answer. We've also worked to expand the website information, services, and communication. We started an frequently asked question site on our web. And what it does is if you were a licensee, you could actually ask a question in there. If we see those coming up, then that gets added and it gives you the answer. It's also a training tool for us so we have consistency with what the information that we're giving out. Increase board involvement. We've done quite a bit in that area. And then to improve the process for investigations, compliance, administrative actions, and then to improve the relations with the Oregon Association of Realtors. The progress report, I think, that Senator Starr had asked for, I put in Section B, which takes each one of those elements in the action plan, tells you what we've done to date, and then what else we need to do. I was very happy the other day to hear Mr. Harris from OAR indicate that he felt that it was extremely important for the education of licensees. We couldn't agree more. In fact, in the 1980s, they had, with the downturn in the real estate industry, they basically eliminated a lot of the educational effort at the agency. They focused strictly on licensing and regulation. Short-term, that probably was a reasonable solution. Long-term, it probably was not. Because if you don't educate your licensees and continue to educate them, it's probably not in the best interest of the consumer. Because we need to have well-educated, trustworthy licensees out there working with a consumer to make sure that they are conducting business in a lawful manner. Let me back up, too. The agency action plan was also reviewed and approved by our board, so they are in line with what we're doing with this particular agency. If there are any questions at this point, I'd be happy to answer them.
See. Senator Starr.
Thank you. Has the agency taken a position at all on Senate Bill 324, or are you working on any amendments to the bill?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, we have been working with the governor's office on those amendments. And so I think until the amendments come out, then the agency's not taking a position at this point.
So have you shared, you have amendments, have you shared them with the board?
Right now the discussions are between the governor's office and Senator Johnson. We're just offering technical support.
So you don't have amendments.
I'm saying that I would not be at liberty to share those with my board because the discussions are really between Senator Johnson and the governor's office, and they've not been finalized, to my understanding.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Well, one thing I'll read through this, and I appreciate the formatting of this. I particularly like, your progress report, how you've laid it out to take different issues and look at that and see your assessment of that. And I wish we'd have more of those types of formats to give us, it kind of allows us to find particular items and bring up for discussion rather than wade through a lot of prose. So I do appreciate that very much.
Just thought of another. So in this conversation with the governor's office, Senator Johnson, have you apprised the board at all of those conversations? Do they have any idea the direction that the amendments are going, or is the board completely outside of that discussion?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, I have talked to my chairman, who is in the audience today, and I have told him all the way along where we are at and working on those amendments, but it's not really my place to share those amendments at this point.
So the answer is no, you have not shared amendments with the board, just you've talked with your board chair. But
that is correct.
But the board members themselves haven't seen any
anything? You haven't corresponded with them?
It would not be my place to be corresponding at this point with the board, but I have kept them apprised of the fact that there are discussions going on.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Well, this was very helpful. The material is helpful for the committee as we move forward on this bill next week, so thank you so much. Okay. Anything else to come before the committee?
Next week.
Next week. Thank you, Janet. Well, here's our schedule for next week. As you know, we're getting near the end of our Senate bills. We're going to meet Monday at 1 o'clock as normal, Wednesday at 1 o'clock as normal, and we're going to meet again at 5 o'clock on Wednesday because we will not be in committee on Thursday. A number of us are heading out for either places beyond or Boston, right? Is that where you're going?
No, D.C.
D.C. Or south for the rural schools tour, so we won't have enough for committee. So we'll have Thursday off, but I'll ask that we have that meeting that same day at 5 o'clock so we can get to our bills. And Senator Georgiou, you had a comment.
No, I'll talk to you afterwards.
Mr. Chair, yes. I usually have a committee Wednesday evenings.
Okay, all right, thank you. Are you in the wings here? I mean, in the main building?
Okay.
So if we need something, we can coordinate.
Yeah.
Okay, we're adjourned.